This is the podcast that puts you at the pointy end of the airplane with two veteran airline captains. We'll offer insight into the pilot brain, we'll have some fun, and promise not to get too techy. Each weekly episode has a segment that provides inside information on what's really going on behind the cockpit door, and we'll discuss some industry current topics that might affect your travels. Your two pilots and co-hosts are Les Abend and Mike Strauss. Les has over four decades and over 25,000 hours of experience flying airplanes. The Boeing 727, 757, 767, and the 777 were all part of Les's repertoire before he retired. He was also a Czech airman. Additionally, Les still has the good fortune to be a 21-year contributing editor for Flying Magazine. He's been an on-air analyst and op-ed contributor for CNN, in addition to MSNBC and NBC, among others. And finally, Les is the author of Paper Wings, a mystery suspense whodunit thriller. Mike is a current A320 captain and Czech airman for a major airline with over 17,000 hours of flight time. In addition to his airline experience, Mike has a diverse general aviation background as an airplane salesman and a corporate pilot flying celebrities and VIPs. If you haven't done so already, please listen to the Welcome Aboard introductory episode. Don't get on an airplane until you've listened to Candid Cockpit.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Candid Cockpit. My name is Les Abend.
And I'm Mike Strauss.
Got that out of the way. On this week's takeoff episode, we're going to be discussing what may possibly be a trend in the commercial aviation industry that's being discussed on the news. Is it a trend? We'll get into that. But there are two prominent accidents, two significant accidents that occurred. One was in JFK on January 13th, where there was a what we call a runway incursion between a 777 that was crossing a runway and a Delta 737 that was doing a takeoff. And then in Austin, we had another incident, not quite the same type of event, but a close call on February 4th. Where there was a FedEx airplane landing at the same time there was a Southwest airplane given a clearance to take off.
Right. In low visibility conditions, I might add.
In low visibility conditions. Good point. And then, of course, there was on February 27th at Boston's Logan Airport. That was a pretty close one as well. There was a landing that was occurring between a JetBlue airplane, a E-190 to be specific, and a departure on a crossing runway for a Learjet 60.
Correct. Corporate jet.
Corporate jet, yeah. Exactly. So is there a trend? We'll talk about it.
And for the cruise segment, we're going to discuss the love-hate, and I'm going to have to really dig deep for that love part, hate relationship of cruise scheduling, who really keeps us where we're supposed to be and where we're at. And that's the biggest part. You know, that Southwest meltdown, they didn't know where everybody was.
Right.
So that wreaks havoc. You know, crew scheduling is, they pretty much control our life once we get into a situation that things need to be changed.
Right.
You know, up until that point, you don't even have to talk to them.
Right. But we very often refer to crew schedules. So what's it all about? What is it there for? Yeah. And then finally, for the landing segment, we'll put you inside what's going on when pilots are talking to air traffic control from, and we're just going to do it from time just prior to engine start to the takeoff clearance.
Right.
And we'll give you some insight on how that all works.
Yeah, we briefly touched on it on an early segment about training.
Right.
And communication being one of the more difficult parts of flight training. So this would be good insight.
Very good. And hey, everybody, before we get started, this is something we ask all the time. Real simple. We would appreciate very much if you would invite your friends, invite your family to listen to the podcast and send us an email. If you've got a topic that you'd like us to consider, send that email to podcast@candidcockpit.com. And please watch us on YouTube. And you can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And I think people are listening to this because we're getting a lot more email questions for topics and stuff like that.
We absolutely are. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our takeoff segment of our episode. Initially, we discussed in the intro that these events are becoming a trend, and we're talking about these runway incursion, near-miss type events.
Right.
And so the first one, briefly, as mentioned, it was on January 13th. It was between an American Airlines 777 that crossed the runway theoretically when it should not have, while a Delta 737 was taking off on the on an intersecting runway.
Right, right.
It was a taxi versus a takeoff situation. It got pretty close.
And it did, within 1,000 feet.
Within 1,000 feet,
and yeah. Controller and Delta pilot both did a phenomenal job in getting everything halted.
They did, and the more research I looked into it, the automatic system, which announces that there may be a possible intrusion, mm-hmm. that did get activated.
Right.
And it got the controllers going pretty quick,
right.
That's for sure. So that was one. The next one was on February 4th, and that was in Austin. There was a Southwest airplane that was cleared at the same time that a FedEx airplane in what you mentioned in the intro was low visibility conditions. Mm-hmm. That's the FedEx airplane was given a clearance to land at the same time the Southwest airplane was given a clearance to take off.
Which in itself is not uncommon.
Right.
You know, an aircraft is cleared to take off and there's an aircraft on a 4 or 5 mile final. And some airports, it's even a little tighter. You know, New York sometimes can be a little tighter, especially at LaGuardia. Boston, in fact, is another one. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, so everything was, I think, going the right way, but... You know, what happened to the Southwest guy? Was he too slow to take off? Was the controller a little late in giving the takeoff clearance? You know, was FedEx going a little bit faster than it should have at that point in its approach? You know, so there's a lot of questions that need to be answered.
But. Well, I think, obviously in low visibility conditions, the priority is the approach.
Agreed.
So I have a feeling that it might have been that Southwest airplane was not given a takeoff clearance quick enough,
right.
But you know, I'm speculating on that one. But the bottom line is, it got close enough that it could have been a problem. However, the alert FedEx pilot and actually the controller said go around. They went around and they performed a procedure that we practice all the time, and it didn't become an issue.
Didn't the controller? Did the controller tell us the FedEx jet to go around, or did he tell the Southwest to abort its takeoff? But yet Southwest had already continued. Continued the takeoff.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I don't know the complete facts on that, but what we're touching on is the idea is that, you know, are these events a trend that's occurring and why are they occurring?
Right.
So the bottom line is everybody did their job and nobody got hurt.
Just off topic, sometimes if you say to me squirrel, it's because, you know, there's a squirrel outside.
Right.
Okay. So, just so you know,
there is
is a squirrel outside.
It's our studio. There's no squirrels in our studio.
Sorry, I get accused of this often.
But, yes.
But yeah, is it a trend? Well, you know, define a trend. Now we move on to the next event.
Right.
Which is in Boston, included an airline I'm fairly familiar with and an airport I'm fairly familiar with.
Yeah, and the intersections are very close. So it was a JetBlue airplane that was an Embraer 190 that was landing. On what is called runway 4 right, which is
4 left.
I believe it was.
Oh, it was 4 right. You're right. Yep. You're right. Yeah, yeah, it was 4 right.
It was 4 right.
Yep.
And then the there was a corporate airplane, a Learjet 60 model.
Correct.
Was which is a fairly a large Learjet.
It is. Sophisticated aircraft.
Very sophisticated airplane. Yeah. Not that that makes a difference, but anyhow, they were on the intersection runway of runway 9. And what happened was they got pretty close, and the JetBlue airplane did exactly what it's supposed to be, and they were given the clearance to go around because I did listen to those tapes. However, I'm sure that they had the power up by the time they were given that clearance. But it got close.
Yeah, it did.
It got close.
And unfortunately, that comes down to the Learjet did not have a takeoff clearance.
And that's something that's going to be investigated.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least that's the initial reaction, and it was given what's called a lineup and wait. And this runway configuration at Boston, when the winds are, let's say, out of the east, northeast, sometimes even just due north,
it's pretty prevailing. Yeah,
yeah. You'll end up landing on one runway, and they'll have an aircraft lined up on runway 9, waiting for the landing aircraft to clear that runway, go past that runway, and then they'll launch the aircraft off of runway 9. And then the next guy will land and they'll do the exact same sequence. And it's very, very common for that airport. A little like Kennedy and 3-1 left from an intersection and 2-2, and anyway.
But the bottom line is it's about efficiency. It's about efficiency.
Yeah.
Efficiency for fuel, efficiency for time. So, and that all has to be choreographed very well. The controllers have their criteria when they can allow an airplane to take off while there's one landing. So, once again, that's all being investigated by the NTSB as a potential runway incursion or a close call, near miss, however you want to define it. So where we're going with this is this a trend? I was asked this on a news program, whether this is something that is starting to happen. And we saw today, on a newscast by network MSNBC that, perhaps this is what we call the canary in the coal mine, I believe.
Sully used that.
Sully used that terminology. And it's possible because of the, these things seem to be coming to light more than usual.
Right.
I remember in the 90s, we had some loss of control incidents with commercial airplanes, yeah. And there were some significant ones, and we did sort of a what you would call a safety summit, and all the airlines regrouped, and we began training with these instances of loss of control.
Right.
Guess what? We don't have those anymore.
Not anymore, right?
Yeah.
And it unfortunately, it takes events to create those summits and get new rules or regulations or new training in place.
The objective is not to hurt people.
Right. And that's what's, I guess if there's a silver lining to the events that are being in the news now, is there have been no injuries through these events.
Right.
There's some other events, some turbulence events that have created some injuries and one death. But they're, so I think that it's getting addressed a little sooner in the process to prevent the injuries, prevent the accidents. So it still remains just an incursion or an incident without injury or loss of life.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I applaud Billy Nolen, the acting FAA administrator, for doing an emergency summit. That's going to happen next week, which will be the week where we recorded this broadcast on March 7th. So I believe it's next week on Wednesday. I could be wrong. But anyhow, they're doing this summit with all the industry players. They're doing it with the airlines. They're doing it with controllers, they're doing with the unions.
Right. And it's not just the executives at the airline, it's going to be pilots from the airline. It's going to be union leaders. It's going to be the airline executives. It's going to be ATC. I'm sure it's going to be controllers and management in ATC as well.
And I applaud them because I think that, each one of these circumstances has a different aspect to it, but if it is a trend, let's grab it now and find out what the heck's going on.
Find that common thread between all these incidents, and that's the thread that needs to be fixed.
And it might not be. It might just be a it might be individual events. Like for instance, the Maui event, where the airplane was climbing, then all of a sudden took a major dive toward ocean. That's unrelated to runway incursions.
It
but
is.
Does that highlight
Something else
we should be taking a look at.
Yeah, and it's kind of we say that once the media gets a hold of, let's say, one incident, they can build on that to other incidents. There's just like driving down the road. There's always accidents. There's always incidents. We don't hear about them. In aviation, we can go months with nothing, and then have several stories in a row because one story begets the next and the next and the next.
Right.
But I think it's also good because the media is bringing this to the world's attention, and therefore it must be addressed. So the executives and the powers to be are jumping on this a little bit sooner than maybe they might in the past.
And you bring that, and I don't mean to be critical of the media because occasionally I participate in it, but at the end of the day, when you start to get sensitized to a lot of these incidents because, MSNBC once again had something on air, with a passenger that went a little crazy and potentially could have seriously injured a flight attendant. Now that passenger had mental illness problems, we're finding out, but what's going on? And, is there something that we should examine in all
of this? And that's what hopefully the summit will reveal. What is it that needs to be examined, or what it'll be several things to examine. You know, going to the passenger issue, I mean, that takes you back to 9/11 a bit because of the media and what the investigators were able to learn about, let's say, Flight 93. People are not afraid to get involved.
Right.
You know, I think that's brought that to the forefront. If passengers see an airplane that have... passengers are on an airplane that see this type of incident, they're going to get involved before they might've just sat back and done nothing. And I've had that type of experience on an aircraft with a passenger, you know, and we got passengers that got involved, you know? So I think all of this is very positive in an effort to keep aviation safe. I mean, when was the last fatal accident in the U.S. with a U.S. airline? 2009. Right. Well,
let's knock on wood.
Have that again. Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, the training, you know, and there's new people coming in, you know, newer, younger air traffic controllers, newer, younger pilots coming in. I think the training does a phenomenal job in getting them ready to do their job. And now it's time to gain that experience. And by addressing these issues now, they'll help those pilots gain the experience that they'll need when they become a captain or as they move up the ATC ladder.
And good points. And let's not forget about the air traffic controllers. Now, I did some research in it, and the FAA, is filling their slots. I didn't get the impression, or at least the FAA is putting out a statement, that they don't have a shortage,
right?
Like we've been talking about, a shortage of experience levels for pilots. So, you know, some of these incidents that we were just talking about may involve, you know, a controller error.
Of course.
You know, we're all human.
Right.
You know, does this relate to the need to hire more controllers, more experienced controllers? But they go through a pretty serious, long...
It's several months.
It goes to several years sometimes to qualify at a particular facility as well.
Right. Well, even in just a particular spot in the facility, you know, a ground controller, right. You could, you know, you come out of the academy after, I want to say it's 8 or 9 months. Then you go to a facility, and then before you're cut loose, so to speak, in that one position, there's several more months of training.
Right.
In that one position.
I think the initial part of the training is 3 to 4 months, and then some of it is dependent upon, you know, we've got folks locally to us where we're recording in Embry-Riddle that actually train to be air traffic controllers.
Right. Yeah, and I guess it's true, the whole training, because if you're going to come out and go to, let's say, a tower, might not be as difficult as center facility or route traffic control center, you know? So yeah, there's different levels of training, but they take people and getting air traffic control experience is difficult to do unless you're an air traffic controller.
Right.
So I think that's why the training is so good. And they come out. I know several air traffic controllers. I was in the program. I was not in the program, but I was hired. Rephrase that. I was interviewed, took the test, told I would get a job. I was put in the pool. And then I was kicked out of the pool because of an age issue. They want, you have to retire as an air traffic controller at 56, which is 9 years younger than pilots do.
Right.
So again, their focus on safety and sharpness is quite high.
30 is the max age that they want to take.
Yeah, you turn 31 and you're out because they want a full 25 years out of you. But the training program is phenomenal.
I'm getting this picture of you as an air traffic controller, and I don't know. I'm getting a little scared.
What are you saying? I'm a little on the controlling side. I mean, most everything would go over my head.
Yeah. Right. So the one last thing, and we'll end this segment on it is, you know, is there one of the things that we learned at my airline was that we had some instances that involved terrain. One of them, you know, was an unfortunate tragedy in Colombia.
Yeah.
But we all of a sudden realized, hey, are we doing stuff that's not that shouldn't happen? And we discovered, let's go back and revisit this. So one of the big things that we discovered was complacency.
It is, yeah.
You know, we were not giving ourselves the situational awareness to understand where terrain was, and we caught that before there were any other instances.
Well, you helped the industry discover that as well,
right? Well, yeah. We had a product that was developed called a ground proximity warning system that used digital data to warn you of terrain, and it gets pretty detailed, more than what we had before. So yeah, it's good to catch a trend, but the more than anything, what I was bringing it up for was, you know, are we, because we have been so robust in our safety programs and been proactive in it, are we getting complacent because these things happen? And I think these are questions that have to be answered at this FAA.
I agree.
Safety.
And there might be a little bit, but you know, being, you know, seeing what, staying fairly close to the training department in my new role as a Czech airman, I'm seeing these guys come out and I'm watching the training that I did for that. And in my last recurrent, my last couple of recurrents, and they're focusing on staying on not falling into a complacent mode.
Right.
You know, so again, right. that's being addressed in the training, and I'm sure that's happening in other airlines as well.
Right.
Yeah. But it can be, I mean, you get complacent driving down the road.
Yeah.
And look what happens. Yeah. You can't really afford complacency in aircraft. And I think the industry is addressing that,
yeah.
you know, and again, with getting ahead of these incidents before they became an accident is smart play.
All right.
So again, to the traveling public, still the safest way to move about.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
I'd rather get on an airplane than I-95. So
there we have go. To get on I-95 today, I just so you know. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, everybody, welcome to the cruise segment of our episode. On today's cruise segment, we're going to talk about crew schedule. What is their function? And basically, we can say their function is to keep the integrity of the schedule, the airline schedule. It's very important.
Right.
They're there to make sure that all the crew members, pilots and flight attendants, show up for their given trip on time. Everybody has to check in. Most airlines do electronic check-in. But that is a big responsibility. The other one is they have to call if somebody calls in sick. So if you call in sick, you're going to call in sick to crew schedule, and they need to call a reserve
pilot.
They
got to replace you.
Yeah, yeah. They got to replace you with a reserve pilot or somebody that volunteers for extra time, extra money, essentially.
That was the key word.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, listen, you know, hey. it's about the almighty dollar.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, you know, so. Yeah. One of the things about crew schedulers is they are very adept at understanding the contract, sometimes better than we do as pilots.
And
there's a lot of details.
There is.
Duty time.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
The amount of flight time.
Rest between.
Between
trips and flights. It's not easy. There's a lot to it. But you're right. You know, their role is as important as, I mean, they're one of the more important roles in the airline because without them, nobody knows where to go and how to get there. Now, typically we bid our schedules. We know our schedules a month in advance and we show up and off we go. Hopefully we never have to talk to crew scheduling. But weather, sick delays, mechanical delays that can cause legality issues. So now crew scheduling has to get involved to fix all that, to make sure the airline can continue to run as close to on time as possible and keep pilots in the right place.
Let me ask you this. We had two separate departments. One was crew schedule mm-hmm. and the other one was crew tracking. So once you signed in for your trip, you were done with crew schedule. Crew tracking is the one that would be responsible for trying to keep the integrity of that schedule once you were on the trip and they were involved with potential trip interruptions, hotels,
right.
unscheduled hotels, things of that nature.
We have crew planning, which leads you up to your schedule. And once you start that trip, it's all on crew scheduling, which handles all of these roles, you know, hotel issues, transportation issues on the ground. If you're going from one airport to another, or if the hotel that you're going to stay at doesn't have transportation, you know, delays, sick calls, things like that, it's always crew scheduling. Now there are different departments within crew scheduling, transportation, today's flight, regular schedule stuff. Then the flight attendants have the same thing.
Right. But so you have a different name for it. We had tracking, you had planning.
Right.
So it sounds like they were similar.
They
similar
are.
Roles.
I'm sure they are.
Okay.
And they're very difficult roles, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We only operate about 1,000 flights a day, with an average of 6 people on each airplane, 6 crew crew members on each airplane.
Right.
So I mean, you're dealing with 6,000 plus people every day.
Right.
You know, so there's a couple hundred crew schedulers, again, in different roles.
Multiply that with my airline and, 15,000 pilots. Pilots.
Just pilots.
Yeah. So flight attendants were above 30.
Yeah.
You know, they were, so it was, it's a lot of work.
It is. And it's not easy. And they don't have an easy job. And sometimes pilots and flight attendants just don't make their life easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's just wrong. I've got a good, you talked about a quote, love-hate relationship. I think they do a great job with what they've got to work with in helping us get to where we need to be.
I always treated them with respect and dignity. And I think that everybody wants to be treated that way. But, you know, they always called me up and said, you know, Captain, you know, here's what's going on. If we got a change in schedule. And they were always very businesslike and respectful.
Right.
And sure, when you get called a lot by the same person, you develop a relationship.
I've got some great friends that in scheduling.
And then you have days that, you know, it's like it's not working out the way you want it to work out.
Right.
And you sometimes you butt heads, but I would say for the most part, I think they're not
90 plus percent of the time. It's just a nice, easy conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of times, you know, I think the biggest issue you might have is both of you understanding the same section of the contract that you're referring to for this particular incident, you know, right. incident that they're trying to resolve. And that's just simply making the airline continue to run. And you want to do your part because chances are you're someplace you don't want to be and you want to get home just like the passengers want to get home. So it's kind of a group effort.
Sometimes you just have to say, yes, dear. And then ask questions later.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just move it along. Yeah.
No, agreed.
Okay.
Once again, as we're in between our segments, we'd like to ask you to invite your friends to watch Candid Cockpit. Send an email with a question or suggest a topic to podcast@candidcockpit.com, and we'll mention your airline name. Don't forget to watch us on YouTube, and then there's the social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
That's it.
MySpace is no longer.
I can't handle any more social network
channels. So the input that we're getting from our viewers and listeners is great. It's bringing up a lot of topics. So keep doing it. Bring it on.
Please. Everybody, welcome to the final segment, our landing segment. We're going to talk about ATC communications, air traffic control communications, initially on the ground from the time just prior to engine start to the time that we get clearance to take off and then we get handed off to into radar environment. So the first clearance we really get, and sometimes we don't even have to talk about it because it's done via a computer database through the FAA and our onboard computers, but we get our clearance from our flight plan.
Clearance is what we get, what we're told to do and where we're told to go.
Exactly. And it tells us our routing and all of that. And sometimes it gives us our delay time. And then we can acknowledge it verbally.
FM clearance, Southwest, 2031, Lincoln Pickup Clearance to Nashville with Sierra.
Southwest, 2031, Lincoln Clearance cleared to Nashville. I saw the local tower heading climbing at 3000. Take bottom of 2801, 0 minutes after departure. Departure for speed 125.1, 12.07, take zero.
Southwest 2031, clear to Nashville asphalt, runway heading on departure 3000, 280 and 10, 125.10760, fourth spot.
But a lot of times you can just acknowledge it via the onboard computer.
Right.
And when you call for taxi, then you tell them that you one particular message indicates that you've got your clearance. The next part is sometimes you have to have a startup clearance. London would give you a startup clearance when they had a lot of airplanes that
right.
were calling for potential taxis. It doesn't happen too often in the States.
I'm trying to think of someplace where it does. Boston would be the closest with you call clearance delivery, even after you've got your clearance from them, to tell them you're ready to taxi, and then they tell you to monitor ground, and ground will then call you, and it could be in 30 seconds, could be in 5 minutes.
Right.
And
it becomes your discretion on when to start it and you know, when to be efficient with it, but there's that. So startup, not so much. Usually your ramp control has control over that because that's not the area that air traffic control controls. And then, of course, there's a taxi clearance. Mm-hmm. So you cannot go from your airline ramp area, is what we call it, to the taxiways until you talk to an air traffic controller and they give you instructions. And as we know, it can be complicated.
Good day. United 1585 over ground, taxi to runway 28 right from Mike. I want you to taxi northbound on Alpha Hotel, uniform over the Alpha Bridge, and I'll have more for you around taxiway Foxtrot. AC 3938 over ground, taxi to runway 28 right from Mike. Hotel, uniform, over the Alpha Bridge, more for you around Foxtrot. United 626, over ground, taxi to runway 22 left. Via Hotel, uniform, over the Alpha Bridge.
We talked about that episode in JFK.
Right.
Sometimes some airports are simpler than others, and others are more complicated. So that taxi clearance is very important. And then after the taxi clearance, once you get in line for takeoff, then you're given a takeoff clearance.
Right.
And it's pretty simple.
Yep.
Good 9 Charlie Golf and 27 left, clear takeoff. Steps with 2 6 degrees, 20 knots, max steps.
Clear takeoff, 27 left, speed with 9 Charlie Golf.
And then after your takeoff clearance and you're airborne, then the controller hands you off to what we call departure control, which is a radar environment that you're involved
in. And they're going to bring you up higher into the sky and get you to an air route traffic control center, which then keeps you where you're supposed to go and how you're supposed to do it en route to your destination, which then it kind of reverses. You're going to talk to an approach control facility, which will get you to the airport, the tower controller, which will get you onto the runway, and then the ground controller, which gets back to your ramp.
Is there any details that you want to add, other than the outline I kind of gave as far as, the clearance for your flight plan and then taxi?
That's pretty much it. But I guess what I will, a lot of times you'll hear from the cockpit, hey, folks, we've got a wheels up time, or there's a flow program going into a certain airport, and they'll have us sit on the ramp or on the runway, or excuse me, on the taxiway, or put us in a spot where we have to just sit and wait it out. And it can be 5 minutes. It can be an hour. And I think that's what I think folks really kind of wonder, like, okay, they're blaming this delay on air traffic control. Well, it is. It's like the 405 in Los Angeles on a Friday afternoon, and you've got those on-ramp traffic lights.
Right.
That's what the flow program is all about. It basically creates, for the highway, on-ramp traffic lights.
I think you bring up a good point, because that flow control that you talk about, with getting on, the on-ramp, can be in the form of thunderstorms. In a line of thunderstorms all the way down, you're looking at blue skies at your departure.
And your destination is blue skies as well.
But air traffic control is funneling everybody around or through a particular hole in this particular line.
Right.
And that is basically why you're sitting on the ground. But more so, is there anything that you want to touch on as far as details of what the controller is saying to you? Or
It goes back a little bit to our training segment. We talked about training and communication being one of the more difficult parts about learning to fly. And it is. You have to listen closely. You have to repeat it back almost verbatim. Be as efficient as you can. In our situation in the cockpit, a lot of times the first officer is the guy talking to air traffic control on the ground. Taxi clearances are usually the longest clearance you'll receive. Short of your pre-delivery clearance, your actual flight clearance.
Right. And you bring up something called phraseology. So it's very important to talk the same language. We don't do CB talk. It's very specific.
I've actually heard that on the radio.
Yeah, it kind of makes me cringe
a little bit.
I hear that sometimes.
But yeah, it is.
And more so in general aviation, because we have what we call the weekend warriors that go up and fly their airplanes.
But you and I fly our airplanes.
Yeah,
as professionally, on the weekends.
Mike's pointing at the model of my Piper Arrow.
So again, it's you repeat everything back verbatim.
Right.
Use the correct phraseology, because the controller should be, so therefore you should be as well, and it creates it dissipates the potential for confusion in that clearance.
Right.
Which takes us back to some of these incidents that we've discussed in the takeoff segment.
Well, communication is a big part of
it's huge.
Every part of our life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can't be anything more important than in air traffic control, because
Absolutely.
It's their job. It truly is the air traffic controller's job to keep airplanes apart.
It is.
So, yeah.
Anything else?
No, I think,
No,
we do what we're told and where we're told to go.
We do.
And if we do that, smartly, diligently. And if you've got a question, let's say you kind of have a question about air traffic control's direction, query them. Just ask the question.
Yeah.
And they may go, hey, good catch, or something like that. But
please clarify. Yeah.
And also, I'll add one thing too. Every air traffic control we're talking to, there's someone sitting next to them listening as well.
Right.
every single position. So there's kind of like there's always at least two of us in the cockpit of the airplane. There's always two air traffic controllers that you're talking to. You don't know that the second one's there unless he overrides the first guy. But there's always two. Again, redundancy, just part of the safety that the aviation industry carries with it.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, Captain Mike, it looks like we've landed this episode, despite the joke that we had off air that we won't tell our audience about. It had something to do with fish. Sorry. Airplane is parked at the gate. I see the jet bridge moving up, and we're glad everybody joined us.
Yeah.
Please, like we always say, send us an email at podcast@candidcockpit.com. Let us know if there's a topic you'd like discussed. And then we'll certainly put your name on air if you give us permission and so on and so forth. Next week, we're going to discuss what it's like to be on call. What is reserve status?
Right.
In other words, is what we call for next.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss there.
Yeah,
it can be interesting.
Why is that pilot always home?
Right.
The neighbors ask sometimes, well,
does he ever go to work?
He's the insurance for the airline.
Exactly.
So, you know, or she. So there we go. We'll discuss that next week.
And while we begin our parking checklist, we just once again want to ask people to send us an email, tell their friends, podcast@candidcockpit.com. Next time you're on an airplane, poke your head in the cockpit and say, hey, you know, guys, I listen to Candid Cockpit and kind of know what's going on here.
Yeah, if you poke your eye in, please ask the permission of the flight attendant.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't want to promote people just bolting up there, and sometimes the crew can be busy, so give it a moment. But they would love to hear that you're
on. Yeah, they do, yeah. And I've talked to a lot of the pilots I fly with now are kind of making comments, hey, we've heard about you guys, and it's kind of cool. So thanks for telling the world what it is more about what we do up front here. You can also catch us on FaceTime, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, social media. Pick one. We're there.
Or Facebook. Facebook.
I fit FaceTime. You got enough of this FaceTime. You don't need any more FaceTime.
Hey, thanks for joining us again. And remember, don't get on an airplane unless you've listened to Candid Cockpit. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for joining us.